Thus have I heard on one occasion the Blessed One was wandering in the Magadhan country and eventually arrived at Rajagaha. There he went to the potter Bhagawa and said to him, "If it's not inconvenient for you, Bhagawa, I will stay one night in your workshop." "It's not inconvenient for me, venerable sir, but there's a homeless one already staying there. If he agrees, then stay as long as you like, venerable sir." Now there was a clansman named Pukkusati who had gone forth from the home life into homelessness out of faith in the Blessed One. And on that occasion, he was already staying at the potter's workshop. Then the Blessed One went to the Venerable Pukkusati and said to him, "If it's not inconvenient for you, monk, I will stay one night in the workshop." "The potter's workshop shop is large enough, friend. I will let the Venerable One stay as long as he likes." Then the Blessed One entered the potter's workshop, prepared a spread of grass at one end, and sat down, folding his legs, setting his body erect, and establishing mindfulness in front of him. Then the Blessed One spent most of the night seated in meditation, and the Venerable Pukkusati also spent most of the night seated in meditation. Then the Blessed One thought, "This clansman conducts himself in a way that inspires confidence. Suppose I were to question him?" So he asked the Venerable Pukkusati, "Under whom have you gone forth, monk? Who is your teacher? Whose Dhamma do you profess?" "Friend, there is the recluse Gotama, son of the Sakyans, who went forth from the Sakyan clan. Now a good report of that blessed Gotama has been spread to this effect. That Blessed One is accomplished, fully awakened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime knower of worlds, incomparable leaders of persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, awakened and blessed. I've gone forth under the Blessed One. That Blessed One is my teacher. I profess the Dhamma of that of the Blessed One. But monk, where is the Blessed One accomplished and fully awakened now living?" "There is, friend, a city in North Country named Sawati. The Blessed One, accomplished and fully awakened, is now living there. But monk, have you ever seen that Blessed One before? Would you recognize him if you saw him?" "No, friend, I've never seen that Blessed One before, nor would I recognize him if I saw him." Then the Blessed One thought, "This clansman has gone forth from the home life into homelessness under me. Suppose I were to teach him the Dhamma." So the Blessed One addressed the Venerable Pukkusati thus, "Monk, I will teach you the Dhamma. Listen and attend closely to what I shall say." "Yes, friend," the Venerable Pukkusati replied, The Blessed One said this: "Monk, this person consists of six elements, six bases of contact, 18 kinds of mental exploration. He has four foundations. The tides of conceiving no longer sweep over him. Let's try that one again. The tides of conceiving do not sweep over one who stands up upon these foundations. And when the tides of conceiving no longer spread a sweep over him, he's called a sage at peace. One should not neglect wisdom, should preserve truth, should cultivate relinquishment, and should train for peace. This is the summary of the exposition of the six elements. Monk, this person consists of six elements." So it was said, and with reference to what was this said? There are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, the air element, the space element, and the consciousness element. So it was with reference to this that it was said, "Monks, this person consists of six elements." "Monk, this person consists of six bases of contact," so it was said. And with reference to what was this said? There are the base of eye contact, the base of ear contact, the base of nose contact, the base of tongue contact, the base of body contact, and the base of mind contact. So it was with reference to this that it was said, "Monk, this person consists of six bases of contact. Monk, this person consists of 18 kinds of mental exploration." So it was said, and with reference to what was this said? "On seeing a form with the eye, one explores a form conducive of joy. One explores a form conducive of grief. One explores a form conducive of equanimity. On hearing a sound with the ear, on smelling an odor with the nose, on tasting a flavor with the tongue, on touching a tangible with the body, on cognizing a mind object with mind, one explores a mind object productive of joy. One explores a mind object productive of grief. One explores a mind object productive of equanimity." So it was with reference to this that it was said, "Monk, this person consists of 18 kinds of mental exploration. Monk, this person has four foundations," so it was said. And with reference to what was this said? "There are the foundation of wisdom, the foundation of truth, the foundation of relinquishment, and the foundation of peace." So it was with reference to this that it was said, "Monk, this person has four foundations. One should not neglect wisdom. One should preserve truth. One should cultivate relinquishment." Cultivating relinquishment actually means using the six R's. letting go, and should train for peace. So it was said, and with reference to what was this said, how, monk, does one not neglect wisdom? There are these six elements: the earth element, water element, fire element, air element, space element, and consciousness element. What, monk, is the earth element? The earth element may either be internal or external. What is the internal earth element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is solid, solidified, and clung to. That is head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinew, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, contents of the stomach, feces, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is solid, solidified, and clung to. This is called the internal earth element. Now, both the internal earth element and external earth element are simply earth element, and that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom. Thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. When one sees it thus, as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element and makes the mind dispassionate towards the earth element. Now I'm going to sutta number 62. And this is, the Buddha was talking to Rahula. Develop meditation that is like the earth. For when you develop meditation that is like the earth, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Just as people throw clean things and dirty things, excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood on the earth is not repelled, humiliated, and disgusted because of that. So too, Rahula, develop meditation that is like the earth. For when you develop meditation that is like the earth, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Don't make a big deal out of it. What, monk, is the water element? The water element may be either internal or external. A little bit too loud, is it?
I don't know what it is.
It's hard to get it right, I guess. Whatever internally belonging to oneself is water, watery and clung to, that is bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, urine, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is water, watery and clung to. This is called the internal water element. Now both the internal water element and the external water element are simply water element. and that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the water element and makes the mind dispassionate towards the water element. Now we go back to Rahula again. Rahula, develop meditation that is like the water. For when you develop meditation that is like water, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Just as people wash clean things and dirty things, excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood in water, and the water is not repelled, humiliated, and disgusted. Because of that, so too, Rahula, develop meditation that is like water. For when you develop meditation that is like water, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. What monk is the fire element? The fire element may be either internal or external. What is the internal fire element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is fire, fiery, and clung to. That is, that by which one is warmed, ages, and is consumed. And that by which what is eaten, drunk, consumed, and tasted is completely digested. Or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is fire, fiery, and clung to. This is called the internal fire element. Now both the internal fire element and external fire element are simply fire element. And that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the fire element and makes mind dispassionate towards the fire element. Rahula, develop meditation that is like fire. For when you develop meditation that is like fire, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Just as people burn clean things and dirty things, excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood in fire, and the fire is not repelled, humiliated, and disgusted because of that, so too, Rahula, develop meditation that is like fire. For when you develop meditation that is like fire, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. What monk is the air element? The air element is also movement and vibration. So of all the elements, this is actually the biggest. The air element may be either internal or external. What is the internal air element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is air, airy, and clung to. That is, upgoing winds, downgoing winds, winds in the belly, winds in the bowels, winds that course through the limbs, in and out breath, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is air, airy, and clung to. This is called the internal air element. Now both the internal air element and external air element are simply air element. and that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. Now, when we're talking about proper wisdom, that's the ultimate of wisdom. Not taking things personally at all. When you have hindrances arise, it's because of taking things personally. You broke one of the precepts, and that causes mind to have agitation in it, mind to have remorse or guilty feeling. It can be something that happened from this lifetime or past lifetime. It really doesn't matter what it is or why it arose. What matters is, what are you doing with it right now? Are you seeing it as an impersonal process? Or are you taking it as something that's very personal? I did this, I did that, and I feel real bad about it. That causes the hindrance to get bigger and more intense when you take it personally. When you start to see that this is just part of a process of dependent origination, and the ultimate goal of dependent origination, seeing conditioned things arise and pass away, is seeing that everything is impersonal. Even if you have a memory of doing it, that memory is already, that's gone. That's from the past. But you're holding on to it. And in your mind, you're making a big deal out of it. You have to let go of these kind of things. You have to use the six R's, not as a stick to stop things from happening. You're not trying to beat things down and stop them. The whole point of the six R's is to allow whatever is going to be there by itself, but don't keep your attention on it. And you've, over the years, you've formed your opinions and ideas about whether you like or dislike something. I had one student that she was doing the forgiveness meditation, and she very timidly came up to one of the interviews and she said, "I was raped and I hate that man so much. I can't forgive him." And I said, basically, well, you gotta. That's something that happened in the past. Why are you hanging on to it now? With, especially in America, the looseness of having an abortion has caused immeasurable amounts of guilt and anxiety to arise in both men and women. It's not just a woman thing. Because a man feels guilty for having caused that situation. But it has to be faced. Yes, I did that in the past. Yes, it was a mistake. Yes, it's really painful. Whose pain is it? It's a memory. Why does it have pain? Why is a painful memory hard to let go of? Because you made a big deal out of it in your mind. You beat yourself up. Not just a little bit, a whole lot. And yes, the meditation is going to be difficult until you finally realize, well, that's something that happened in the past. It was a mistake. I screwed up. But it doesn't have to affect the way you see the world around you now. You'll still have the memory, but you get to let go of the pain. I mean, I've had students, this one lady, she had an 8-year-old daughter and 9-year-old son, took them to the beach, just off La Jolla's shores. Well, but it gives you an idea of how incredibly painful it can be that you have to allow. Her daughter got eaten by a shark. And of course, she was very sad. It's like everybody in the family was. They felt hopeless, helpless. I can't do anything to make it any better. Well, that's not a true statement. A true statement is, I can help everybody else in the family, and I can help myself by forgiving the shark. It's just doing what it does. And forgiving yourself for allowing her to go into the water. A few days after they caught the shark and they cut it open, and there was the body of this little girl. She was starting to be digested, let's put it that way. She wasn't very pretty. But the mother had to go and identify the body to make sure that that was her and it wasn't somebody else. So I went with them. And I told the mother, this is going to be extremely painful. There's no way around it. It's something that you really need to do. And it's going to hurt. Let the hurt tear your heart out. Let that pain be there without resisting it, without trying to control it, without trying to push it away. So she did. And I talked to her often after that. Are you letting that pain come whenever it comes? Not trying to control it, not trying to make it something other than it is, not beating yourself up because there it is again. You have to allow these things to be as they arise. Can't be afraid of it. Can't be worried about what somebody else thinks because they didn't go through that experience. How do they know what you're going through? The girl that got raped, it took her 2 retreats to finally forgive the man that caused her that pain. And when she did, she had such big relief. That doesn't mean the next time she sees that man that she's going to run up and give him a hug. But she's not going to hold the resentment of that action that he did. The little girl's mother, she spent a lot of time sending loving and kind thoughts to her daughter. She got a picture of her daughter and put it in front of her. And she asked the daughter to forgive her for not being more careful. And she forgave the daughter for not being more careful. And she heard the daughter come back in her mind and say, I forgive you too. The thing with grief is, at first, it's going to come up a lot very strongly. After a month or 6 weeks, it's not going to be coming up as strongly. But every time it came up, she opened up her heart and let that sadness come out. And the anger and the blaming that she did to herself. She let all of that be. She didn't try to make it any different. She didn't try to change the pain. She allowed it to happen because that was the truth of the present moment. Well, this meditation's supposed to make me happy. Well, it will when you let go of the pain. Not wanting to face the pain means you're fighting with the truth, because the pain is there. And it's okay for it to be there. It has to be okay, because that's the truth. When pain arises, it doesn't matter whether it's physical pain or mental pain. The truth is, it's there. Who did you ask that pain to come up? Did you say, I haven't had a pain in my back for a long time. I might as well have some now. It comes up when conditions are right for it to come up. What you do with what arises in the present dictates what happens in the future. If you're fighting with the present and you don't like it, and you're trying to control it, you can look forward to a lot more pain coming up. Or you can allow it to be there, realizing that it's just part of a process. And let it be without judging or condemning or wanting to make it different than it is, or changing it in any way. You have to allow it to be there by itself. Remember, mindfulness means remembering to observe how mind's attention moves, not how to control it with what I think is mindfulness. That doesn't work. Because I'm there. I want it to be the way I want it to be, when I want it that way. And if it doesn't meet my expectation, I'm going to wrestle with it. I'm going to fight with it. And I'm going to cause myself extreme pain. Well, you can do that. It's up to you. But when you start really learning how to allow things to be without taking them personally, that extreme pain lessens until finally, yeah, that happened back then, okay? Everything is forgiven now. One of the women that I helped, she'd been raped and she had a child. I mean, she got pregnant and she definitely didn't want that baby. So then she added to her pain by getting an abortion. So she really had a double whammy of pain. The outrage of being so violated and the pain of letting go another life. It's hard. One of the things that I did was I had them go out and buy some animals that were going to be killed. In this case, she bought a big pig. They were just getting ready to slaughter the pig. She let it go in the forest with the thought of now all of that pain, all of that suffering can just be let go of now. I don't have to take it personally anymore. Giving life is one of the most precious things that you can give. And there is a great amount of relief. Now, this only works with animals that are getting ready to be killed. And when you let that animal go, quite often they'll take off a few steps from you, turn around and look you in the eye and go, "Thank you." It happens with chickens, it happens with fish. They'll hang around for a little while and they'll look at you with thankfulness in their mind because you're allowing them to live one more day at least. How long they live after that is up to them. But as soon as she let go of that pig and let go of the guilty feeling and let go of the anger and let go of all those emotional proliferations, right after that, she went from having a very hard, sad face to having an uplifted face that was radiant. And she was actually able to do the meditation without much of a problem after that. But she got to go through it. And the more that you can let go of the helpless feeling, let go of the guilty feeling of making a mistake, let go of whatever it is in the past that you did that was a problem, and you might have made the right decision, but it didn't come out the right way, or you made the wrong decision and it didn't come out the right way. It doesn't matter what the cause is. What matters is that you recognize this is where I have an attachment. These thoughts, these feelings, they're mine. When you learn how to 6R and allow that feeling to be there, yes, it's painful. I understand painful feeling. I had 20 years of it because of the meditation that I did. But you can learn to allow that pain to be there without trying to control it at all. It's just from a past action. It's certainly not you. You wouldn't do anything like that. So you don't need to feel guilty anymore about it. It's just these thoughts and feelings. And they are all honestly impersonal. But when we start taking things personally, we start making a big deal out of it in our minds. Oh, that was a bad thing to do. I wish I wouldn't have done this, or I wish I wouldn't have said this, or I wish I wouldn't have hurt someone else in whatever way. Well, the truth is, you did do it. Now fess up to it. Yeah, I did that. And learn from your mistake. Don't do the same thing over and over and over again. It's real important that you understand that you don't have to repeat history. Now you can respond with more understanding about the impersonal nature of everything. You might have done something 500 lifetimes ago. I mean, the Buddha had a real sore back at the end of his life. Why? Because at one time he was a wrestler and he was a rough and tumble guy. And the way he won his wrestling matches was he would pick people up and then drop them on his knee and he would break their back. So what happened to the Buddha when he was right near the end of his life? Oh, I got a bad back. Even somebody that was as pure as the Buddha still had some old karmic thing coming back at him. But he didn't take it personally. He saw that, yeah, the back is getting tired, back is getting sore, I need to relieve that by laying down. And he did. He gets somebody else to finish his Dhamma talk. But it didn't upset his mind that that was happening. His mind accepted it. That's what equanimity is all about, having that balanced mind. So there's times when there's going to be pain. But this is one of the goodnesses about being reborn as a human being. Because it's a realm that has not only pain, but it has pleasure. And you get to choose which one you want to cultivate. Being grateful for things that keep arising over and over again. Why would you be grateful for a guilty feeling? Well, be grateful because it's given you the opportunity to use the 6 R's again. It's helping you to realize this is part of an impersonal process. Doesn't have anything to do with me. It's just some old actions that were breaking precepts. This is why the precepts are so important to keep now. I went to a Zen retreat. I've only been to one. I'll never do that again. But they were real big on talking about the precepts. And you had to do it to your teacher. Only this teacher can give me the precepts. So I started talking to them about their daily life, and they said, "Ah, we just do it on the weekend when we have a retreat. We just keep the precepts, but the rest of the time we go out and do what we want." Well, yeah, and they can suffer a lot because of it. And they don't really understand the Buddha's teaching because of that. You see me reading the suttas, and they can seem somewhat abstract at times, but really, they're very, very practical. At one time I was getting carried away with Chinese because they are real big on face. Keeping, don't want to lose face. So they developed their little white lies. And they'd take the precepts and then right after that come up and tell you a white lie. And I kept on telling them, stop doing that. Don't say anything. Yeah, but they asked me what I thought about this or that, and I didn't want to hurt their feeling. So I lied to them. Well, what kind of reputation are you getting when you do that? How much pain are you causing yourself when you come and try to do a retreat and your mind is so full of restlessness and anxiety, you can hardly sit still in one place without moving? Who caused that to happen? Somebody out here? No, you cause it to yourself. And the more you continue doing it, the more pain you are going to have, the less quiet your mind becomes. And you'll stop meditating because you'll say, it doesn't work. Well, it works, but you have to do the whole formula. You can't just do part. The first part of meditation is practicing your generosity. Well, how can I practice generosity on a retreat? Can you be forgiving? Can you be kind to yourself? Can you forgive yourself for making mistakes in the past and letting them go? You're practicing generosity to yourself, but it's not only to yourself. You're practicing your generosity to the other person that caused the pain to arise, because you're letting go of them in your mind. So it's a real important aspect to continually see that everything is impersonal. I did a meditation on my own for about 6 months where I questioned every thought that came into my mind. Is that me? Is that my thought? Did I ask that thought to come up? No. So, let it go. That was before I started putting the relaxed step in. I wasn't letting go of the craving, so I had a lot of work to do for that 6 months. Now it's real easy to recognize when your mind is distracted. Let it be. I don't care what kind of distraction it is. I don't care if it's painful or joyful. Either one. If it's pulling your attention away, let it be. Don't keep your attention on it. Relax. Smile. Come back to your object of meditation. Stay with your object of meditation. That's the key. It's such a simple practice. You don't give in to that distraction mind. You don't give in to, well, I'm going to do this meditation for a few hours here and then I'm going to forget it for the rest of the day and do something else. No, that doesn't work. You have to stay with your object of meditation all the time, as much as you can remember to do it. Observe how mind's attention moves. As you improve your observation, you start catching it more quickly. And you start letting go and relaxing more easily, and bringing a light mind back to your object of meditation. See, I'm talking about loving kindness, but I'm talking about forgiveness. They're the same thing. Isn't that odd? You're giving loving kindness to yourself when you really forgive. And when you start giving it to yourself and truly appreciate that, you're never going to harm another being. That's what the Buddha said. He who loves himself will never cause harm to anyone else around him. So that's, you got to start at home, your home base, right here. And then later, right here. So when you stop making a big deal out of, I made a mistake, I remember one time my mother asked me something, and I flat out told her a lie. She got mad at me because she knew I was lying. And she went and got the Bible, and she said, put your hand on the Bible and tell me. And I did, and I told her the lie again. I was guilty for years after that. I thought I was going to go to hell because I was raised a Christian. And when it came up, when I started doing the forgiveness meditation, I was so shocked I couldn't believe it. I'd forgotten all about that one little thing, but it built up into a big thing in my mind. And it made me highly emotional when anything close to that happened. So it can be a little thing that you've done in the past, but your mind took it as a big thing. God is going to throw down the lightning bolts any moment. I was walking around in fear, anxiety. I knew I was going to get punished. I love the Christians and the Catholics for making that such a big deal. Because when you let go of it, there's so much relief, you can't believe it. Anyway, that's what confession is supposed to be about. But they have the red telephone. They can go straight to God and make everything all right. Just by saying, you know, I didn't pray today. Okay, do three Hail Marys and away you go. You got to pay your penance. Ah, well, maybe. Probably not. Doesn't work that way. That's why the kind of forgiveness they're talking about with the Christians is only surface. Because they just say it one or two times and say, okay, now I can forget it, but they still have the guilty mind. They still have the identification with those thoughts and feelings, and it's going to cause them more and more suffering as time goes by. But when you're doing this kind of forgiveness and you forgive everything and you're grateful for it to come up, not have aversion to it, ah, I got another opportunity to let this bad guy go. Let this guilty feeling be. So I don't know why I started talking like that, but it seems to clear up some understanding. What we're doing, why we're doing it. Well, I did the forgiveness meditation all the time for 2 years because I wanted to know every little aspect of guilty feeling, how it came up. I got to see how it came up. I got to see how I was identifying with it. I got to let it go. So it's a real important thing to realize that when you're doing loving kindness meditation, it's going to bring up some old painful things that you've been stuffing down. And you made a big deal out of it in your mind. And you had a secret. You know one of the definitions of an arahat? A person with no secrets. Because when you keep a secret, who's keeping it? I can't let them know that I was like that. I can't cause them embarrassment to find out I'm not as good as I think I should be. Let go of your secrets. And as soon as you do, as soon as you tell someone else about your secret, it's not a secret anymore. Then it's easy to talk about this stuff. It's easy to let go of this stuff. It's easy to stop identifying with it. So, the whole idea, the whole seeing as it actually is with proper wisdom, this is not me. It's not mine. I didn't ask this to come up. I can't make it go away. It's going to do its own course. But it's painful. Well, yeah, okay. Painful feeling, pleasant feeling, same coin, different sides. And it has to be okay that it does it when it's going to do it. I had one lady that started doing the forgiveness meditation, and she just started going off on all the people that she was ticked off at. Oh, I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you. She came back and she said, I've forgiven everybody. I said, you forgive yourself? Well, why would I do that? Because you're the one that's holding on to all these hard feelings, and you're just doing a superficial forgiveness. You're not doing real forgiveness. Because real forgiveness causes change in your perspective. It causes you to see up close and personal where you've been holding on to this secret and how much pain you've caused yourself by keeping it a secret and how much you haven't forgiven yourself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted. What does disenchanted mean? It means not excited at all about it being there. Not enchanted with it anymore, like you are now, when you're holding it something back and trying to stop it from coming up. Oh, but it's just too painful. Whose pain is it? It comes from your guilty feeling and thinking about it over and over again. What you think and ponder on, that's the inclination of your mind. You think and ponder on bad things that you did, your mind is going to incline to think about those things. You start thinking about forgiving and allowing and relaxing, then your mind is going to incline towards that. But you have resistance to it because it's painful. Well, be grateful that that pain there, that means you're alive. And it's okay. It has to be okay, because that's the truth. You can't fight with the truth. Doesn't work. I'll tell you that for an actual fact. I mean, I've been doing it. I've been doing this practice for over 40 years. The first 10 or 15 was no cakewalk. It was seeing a lot of painful stuff and causing myself a lot of painful stuff and being caught and not seeing because there was no relaxed step in that practice. So I'd get out of meditation. You know, meditation makes you feel good. Unless somebody says something you don't like. And then what? Or does something you don't like. If you don't continue on with the six R's and softening your mind and allowing... I went to a retreat years and years ago where there was a Trappist monk. And as soon as he walked into the retreat, you could just feel that heart energy. I mean, he was really amazing. And everybody was real happy that he was there. And at the end of the retreat, some of the people asked, "Give us a talk. Talk to us about how to practice having that open heart like you have." And he kept calling it not loving kindness, loving acceptance. When you lovingly accept yourself for making mistakes, you're practicing forgiveness. When you lovingly accept somebody else because they were a turkey in one way or another, you're practicing forgiveness. See, there's no real separation between these two practices, except in name alone. Still the same practice. Soften your mind, allow it to be there. Gets real interesting. Starts to be a lot of fun once you make up your mind to do it. And then do it. So it makes the mind dispassionate to finally forgive. Let it be there. Dispassion means that there's absolutely no hold on whatever it is that has been coming up over and over again. There's no hold on it. When you're dispassionate towards it, it's just another thing that arises. Okay, it's a painful feeling. Okay, so what? It's a pleasant feeling. Okay, so what? A lot of people come to do a retreat and they think they know what meditation is. Because they've heard about it. Yeah, there's some real neat things. Oh, I heard about the Tibetans. They can hold their breath for 5 hours. Or whatever. They can melt, or they can take sheets that are drenched in cold water while they're sitting in the snow and heat them up so that they're not damp anymore. Oh, I've heard about all of those stories. I want to be able to do that. They don't realize what they have to let go of before they're going to be able to do that sort of thing. They're really is or has to be a want to change. That's why I got into Buddhism. That's why I got into meditation. I didn't like what was happening to me in the real world. I was extremely unhappy. I got depressed. I got sometimes really nasty to people. I did all kinds of things that weren't good, trying to run away from the pain. And it got so intense, finally I had to do something about it. And the first couple times I did meditation, I went to the teacher and I said, "This stuff doesn't work. I have all of this painful stuff coming up. What am I supposed to do with this stuff?" He just laughed. "Just continue." It was the Mahasi method, so it was just note it till it goes away. Well, it didn't go away, it stayed there. I had to practice meditation 5 years before I found out what it wasn't. But I was so intent on wanting to have that suffering stop that I was willing to follow anybody that told me how to do it. So, Rahula, develop meditation that is like the air. For when you develop meditation that's like air, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain, unless you're there to try to control it. You're there not liking it. You're there tightening your mind around it and making yourself suffer more. Just as the air blows on clean things and dirty things, on excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood, and the air is not repelled and humiliated by it, and not disgusted because of that, so too, Rahula, develop meditation that is like the air. For when you develop meditation that's like the air, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Might invade your mind, but it's not going to remain. Unless I'm there and I don't like it. I want it to be different than it is. I want to change it. I want my meditation to be peaceful and calm. Well, you can want that all you want. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. These instructions are simple. Too simple. Just follow using the six R's. Staying on your object of meditation. Don't change your object of meditation. Don't get curious and start following where your mind is going to go. That doesn't work. Recognize that your mind is distracted. You're not on your object of meditation. Fine, it doesn't matter how many times your mind gets distracted. It doesn't matter how pleasurable it is or how painful it is. It doesn't matter. It's not yours anyway. Right? So why hold on to it? Why try to control it? Just start seeing it as a process. This stuff arises, okay? Truth is, it's there. Six R. With a light mind. every time you see you're getting serious, guess who's there? Who came for dinner? I did. Okay, you can do that all you want. Certainly doesn't lead to your happiness or the happiness of people around you, because you get caught up in your emotional, habitual tendencies and react the way you always act when this kind of thing comes up. How much pain do you cause yourself? How much are you willing to put up with before you change? When I go to Indonesia, a lot of people have this idea that meditation is just supposed to be great fun, because they hear about the success of other people, but they don't see the pains they went through to get to it, and the pains that they had to let go of, and the dissatisfaction, and all of these other negative mental states that they had to let go of. They had to change. And change is incredibly frightening. Well, I know if I stay this way, I'm going to suffer, but at least I know it. But if I change, what's going to happen next? Ooh. So, your choice. Run away from it? Try to ignore it? Get into your suffering. That's the way. Really cause yourself a lot of mental distress. Then you'll get so tired of it that you want to change. And it has to be sincerely want to change. Can't be surface. Okay. What monk is the space element? The space element may be either internal or external. What is the internal space element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is space, spatial and clung to. That is the holes of the ears, the nostrils, the door of the mouth, and that aperture whereby what is eaten, drunk, consumed, and tasted get swallowed, and where it collects and where it is excreted from below, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is space, spatial and clung to. This is called the internal space element. Now both the internal space element and the external space element are simply space element. And what should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the space element and makes a mind dispassionate towards the space element. I really don't like the word makes the mind dispassionate. It's like I'm there and I'm going to make it be that way. Allow the mind to become dispassionate. Rahula, develop meditation that's like space. For when you develop meditation that's like space, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Just as space is not established anywhere, so too Rahula, develop meditation that is like space. In other words, sharpen your mindfulness. How do these things arise? Why? What it is, doesn't matter. Now, one of the things that you can do for yourself if you get caught by having the same kind of hindrance over and over again, ask yourself why. What's the cause of this? I've told this story many times. I was working in a meditation center and a man came and wanted to do a meditation. He was going to have to do it by himself. So the teacher came to me. I was a handyman. I was fixing up a house that was falling apart. And he said, I want you to do a retreat with this man. Okay, I came here to do that. But I started sitting, and my mind was really restless, and I'm not prone to restlessness. And I kept thinking, you know, this is really weird. My mind just won't settle down. After 2 days of retreat, my mind should be calm, but it's not. I wonder why it's like that. So I asked myself the question, why is it like that? What's causing my mind to get so restless? And then I forgot about it and just went off and did more meditation. And my mind came back with its intuition, and it said, you don't really want to be doing the retreat. You want to be fixing the windows that are falling apart. And I looked at that and I went, that one small desire made my meditation hell, made it hard, because I didn't really want to be doing it. I wanted to be doing this other stuff. As soon as I saw that, I went, well, I'm here to learn more about meditation. That's why I'm living in a meditation center. So, let go of it. I let go of that small desire. My meditation got real deep real quick. I didn't have a problem with restlessness anymore. Ask yourself the question, what's the cause of this? Why is my mind acting like it does? Let your intuition answer. When you quiet your mind down, your intuition actually becomes kind of a loud voice. But when you're real busy thinking this and that, I'm a squirrel, thinking this and that, you won't hear your intuitive voice. Try it. See. You might be surprised with the answers that it comes up with. There was a man that was a brilliant meditator. I mean, he was really good. He was in the realm of neither perception or non-perception. Great stuff. After 2 or 3 days, he's not progressing anymore. I said, and he's Korean, so I had trouble going through a translator. And I said, what's the matter? Why are you starting to throw your anger at me like I'm at fault? You're doing the meditation. And I told him, you have to ask yourself, what are you doing that's causing the meditation not to go any deeper? And he came back the next day and he said, I'm not waiting anymore. He was waiting for Nibbana to occur. Well, isn't that some longing? That one little idea was stopping him from going deeper. And he got the answer himself, and he adjusted and did quite well by the end of the retreat. So it's real interesting that you do have to pay attention to your intuitive mind. And once you get used to listening to it, you find out it's right all the time. It doesn't give you any nonsense, bad thoughts. It gives you the truth. So you have to learn how to trust yourself. When you develop mindfulness or meditation that is like space, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Then there remains only consciousness, purified and bright. This is talking about getting into the fourth jhana. What does one cognize with that consciousness? One cognizes this is pleasant. One cognizes this is painful. One cognizes this is neither painful nor pleasant. In dependence on a contact to be felt as pleasant, there arises a pleasant feeling. When one feels a pleasant feeling, one understands, I feel a pleasant feeling. Perception is the thing that names that. One understands, with the cessation of that same contact to be felt as pleasant, its corresponding feeling, the pleasant feeling that arose in dependence on that contact to be felt as pleasant, ceases and subsides. What's the best feeling in meditation? No feeling. Having a quiet mind. You're working towards it. You'll get there if you follow the directions the way I'm giving them to you. That's right. When feeling arises right after that, there is perception. And this is like really close. And right after that, the I like it, I don't like it mind, craving. And after that, your stories and opinions and ideas. And after that, your habitual emotional tendency. So when feeling doesn't arise, then there's no craving that arises. If there's no craving, there's no clinging, no clinging, no habitual tendency. But you can't make it not arise. You can't be there. It has to be a natural process. And it is, and it works that way. It is. Your mind will get to a place that I call exquisite stillness, where you might sit for an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half, without having anything disturb your mind. Nice. And your mind is pure at that time. Why? There's no craving. In dependence on a contact to be felt as painful, there arises a painful feeling. When one feels a painful feeling, one understands, I feel a painful feeling. Nothing new there. One understands, with the cessation of that same contact to be felt as painful, its corresponding feeling, the painful feeling that arose in dependence on that contact, to be felt as painful, ceases and subsides. independence on a contact to be felt as neither painful nor pleasant, there arises a neither painful nor pleasant feeling. When one feels a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, one understands, I feel a neither painful nor pleasant feeling. This kind of feeling is what you call equanimity, when your mindfulness is sharp. If you don't really notice it, that means you're being indifferent. One understands with the cessation of that same contact to be felt as neither painful nor pleasant, its corresponding feeling, the neither painful nor pleasant feeling that arose independent on that contact to be felt as neither painful nor pleasant, ceases and subsides. Monk, just as from the contact and friction of two fire sticks, heat is generated and fire is produced, with the separation and disjunction of those two fire sticks, the corresponding heat ceases and subsides. So too, independence on contact to be felt as pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, there arises that corresponding feeling. One understands with the cessation of that same contact to be felt as pleasant, painful, neither painful nor pleasant, its corresponding feeling ceases and subsides. Then there remains only equanimity, purified and bright, malleable, wieldy, and radiant. Now this is the description of the fourth jhana. Suppose a monk, a skilled goldsmith, or his apprentice were to prepare a furnace, heat up the crucible, take some gold with tongs and drop it into the crucible. From time to time he would blow on it. From time to time he would sprinkle water over it. From time to time he would just look on. That gold would become refined, well refined, completely refined, faultless, rid of dross, malleable, wieldy, and radiant. Then whatever kind of ornament he wishes to make with it, whether a gold chain or earrings or a necklace or a golden garland, it would serve his purpose. So too, then there remains only equanimity, purified and bright, malleable, wieldy, and radiant. And that equanimity gets finer and finer until you get off of the wheel of samsara. You start getting this disenchantment, which is a very much finer kind of equanimity, but it's not as strong. You go and you start looking at food and you say, well, I generally eat this or that. I'm going to eat my favorite food today. And you look at it and your mind goes, so what? I know I need to eat. Doesn't matter what I put in my body. I have to let go of my old opinions and ideas. Body needs energy. Food is energy. When you fast like we're fasting on this retreat, 16 hours a day, then your body actually becomes very healthy. And as a monk, that's the first thing I do when I start feeling a cold coming on, is I don't eat anything. I just drink water. I take vitamins. Vitamin C, vitamin D3. But I don't eat any food. And a cold can, it can last me 6 or 8 hours before it goes away. Or you can muscle your way through, have a cold for a week because you don't pay attention to your body. I learned that a long time ago, that if you take care, you start feeling the achy feeling in your body, you start sneezing a little bit, your body is telling you two things. One, don't eat. Two, lay down and rest. That doesn't mean read a book. It doesn't mean listen to a Dhamma talk. It doesn't mean listen to music. It means lay down and rest. Every couple hours you can pop some vitamins, vitamin C, vitamin D3, and your cold isn't going to last very long. But, I'm too busy. I have to go do this. I have to go do that. What kind of perspective are you developing? One that's going to carry that cold around with you and you're going to suffer for a week, at least. He understands thus, if I were to direct this equanimity so purified and bright to the base of infinite space with compassion and to develop my mind accordingly, then this equanimity of mind supported by the base, by that base, craving and clinging to it would remain for a very long time. If I were to direct this equanimity so purified and bright to the base of infinite space with compassion, to the base of infinite consciousness with joy, to the base of nothingness with equanimity, to the base of neither perception nor non-perception, and to develop my mind accordingly, then this equanimity of mind, which gets much subtler as you go, supported by that base, craving and clinging to it, would remain for a very long time, if you're not using the six R's. I understand thus, if I were to direct this equanimity so purified and bright to the base of infinite space with compassion and to develop my mind accordingly, this would be conditioned. If I were to direct this equanimity so purified and bright to the base of infinite consciousness with joy, or to the base of nothingness with equanimity, to the base of neither perception nor non-perception, and to develop my mind accordingly, this would be conditioned. He does not form any condition or generate any, here we go again, volitional tending towards either being or non-being, since he does not form any condition or generate any volitional tending towards either being or non-being. He does not crave and cling to anything in this world. When he does not crave and cling, he is not agitated. When he is not agitated, he personally attains Nibbana. How about that? He understands thus, birth is destroyed, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done. There's no more coming to any state of being. If he feels a pleasant feeling, he understands it is impermanent. There is no holding to it. There is no delight in it. If he feels a painful feeling, he understands it is impermanent. There's no holding to it. Holding to it means trying to push it away. There's no delight in it. If he feels a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he understands it is impermanent. There's no holding to it. There's no delight in it. If he feels a pleasant feeling, he feels detached. If he feels a painful feeling, he feels detached. If he feels a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, he feels detached. When he feels a feeling terminating with the body, he understands, I feel a feeling terminating with the body. When he feels a feeling terminating with life, he understands, I feel a feeling terminating with life. He understands on the dissolution of the body, with the ending of life, all that is felt, not being delighted in, will become cool right there. What does that mean, become cool? Nibbana. No fire. Monk, just as an oil lamp burns in dependence on oil and a wick, and when the oil and wick are used up, if he does not get any more fuel, it's extinguished from lack of fuel. So too, when he feels a feeling terminating with the body, or a feeling terminating with life, he understands, I feel that kind of feeling. He understands on the dissolution of the body with the ending of all of life, all that is felt, not being delighted in, will become cool right then. Therefore, a monk possessing this wisdom possesses the supreme foundation of wisdom. This is not me. Not mine. I'm not that. For this monk is the supreme noble wisdom, namely the knowledge of the destruction of all suffering. How do you get there? Six R's. Seeing things impermanent. Seeing things impersonally. There's no more suffering when you see it that way. But you can indulge in it. You can be afraid of change. That's only going to cause a lot of problems in the future for you. Because anytime you get close to that change, you're going to back off, run away from it. No, I can't do that. It hurts too much. Who hurts too much? Who's taking it personally? Who's doing that to themselves? Because I've got a secret and I can't tell anybody. I'm such a bad person. Well, you can't. You can let it go. That's the definition of an arahat, a person that doesn't have any secrets. Interesting. His deliverance, being founded upon truth, is unshakable. For that is false monk, which has deceptive nature, and that is true, which has an undeceptive nature. Nibbana. Therefore, a monk possessing this truth possesses the supreme foundation of truth. For this monk is the supreme noble truth, namely Nibbana, which has an undeceptive nature. Formerly, when he's ignorant, he undertook and accepted acquisitions, stuff. That's not only physical, it's also mental. Now he has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made like a palm stump, done away with them so they're no longer subject to future arising. Therefore, a monk possessing this relinquishment, lack of craving, possesses the supreme foundation of relinquishment. For this monk is supreme noble relinquishment, namely the relinquishment of all acquisitions, taking it personally. Formerly, when he was ignorant, he experienced courteous covetousness, desire, and lust. Now he has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made like a palm stump, done away with them, so they're no longer subject to future arising. Formerly, when he was ignorant, he experienced anger, ill will, and hate. Now he has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made like a palm stump, done away with them, so they're no longer subject to future arising. Formerly, when he was ignorant, he experienced ignorance and delusion. What is delusion? Taking it personally, right? What is ignorance? That's right. Now he has abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made them like a palm stump, done away with them so they're no longer subject to future arising. Therefore, a monk possessing this peace possesses the supreme foundation of peace. For this monk is the supreme noble peace, namely the pacification of lust, hate, and delusion. Another way of saying the pacification of craving. So it was with reference to this that it was said, one should not neglect wisdom, should preserve truth, should cultivate relinquishment, and should train for peace. The tides of conceiving do not sweep over one who stands upon these foundations. And when the tides of conceiving no longer sweep over him, he's called a sage at peace. So it was said, and with reference to this was it said, monk, I am is conceiving. I am this is conceiving. I shall be is conceiving. I shall not be is conceiving. I shall be possessed of form is conceiving. We ought to tell that one to our friend that's doing the your book. I shall be formless is conceiving. I shall be percipient is conceiving. That means radiant, actually. The Pali word for that, I looked it up, and it is obasa, which means radiant. I shall be non-percipient, is conceiving. I shall be neither percipient nor non-percipient, is conceiving. Conceiving is a disease. Conceiving is a tumor. Conceiving is a dart. by overcoming all conceivings, monk, one is called a sage at peace. And the sage at peace is not born, does not age, does not die. He's not shaken and doesn't yearn for anything. For there is nothing present in him by which he might be reborn. Not being born, how could he age? Not aging, how could he die? Not dying, how could he be shaken? Not being shaken, how could he yearn for anything? That's another definition of arahat. So it was with reference to this that it was said, the tides of conceiving do not sweep over one who stands upon these foundations. And when the tides of conceiving no longer sweep over him, he's called a sage at peace. Monk, bear in mind this brief exposition of the six elements. Thereupon the venerable Pukkusati thought, indeed the teacher has come to me. The sublime one has come to me. The fully awakened one has come to me. Then he rose from his seat, arranged his upper robe over one shoulder, and prostrating himself with his head at the Blessed One's feet, he said, venerable sir, a transgression overcame me in that, like a fool, confused and blundering, I presumed to address the Blessed One as friend. See how slight that, well, I didn't know. But that's only an excuse. Venerable sir, may the Blessed One forgive my transgression, seen as such for the sake of restraint in the future. Surely, monk, a transgression overcame you in that, like a fool, confused and blundering, you presumed to address me as friend. But since you see your transgression as such and make amends in accordance with the Dhamma, we forgive you. For it is growth in the Noble One's discipline when one sees one's transgressions as such and make amends in accordance with the Dhamma and undertakes restraint in the future. Venerable sir, I would receive the full admission under the Blessed One. He wants to be ordained now. But are your bowl and robes complete? You have to be responsible for getting your own robes and bowl. Venerable sir, my bowl and robes are not complete. Monk, Tathagatas do not give full admission to anyone whose bowl and robes are not complete. Then the venerable Pukkusati, having delighted and rejoiced in the Blessed One's words, rose from his seat, and after paying homage to the Blessed One, keeping him on the right, he departed in order to search for bowl and robes. Then, while the venerable Pukkusati was searching for bowl and robes, a stray bull killed him. Close but no cigar. Then a number of monks went to the Blessed One, after paying homage to him, sat down at one side and told him, venerable sir, the clansman Pukkusati, who was given brief instruction by the Blessed One, has died. What is his destination? What is his future course? Monks, the clansman Pukkusati was wise. He practiced in accordance with the Dhamma and did not trouble me in interpretation of the Dhamma, with the destruction of the five lower fetters, the clansman Pukkhusati has reappeared spontaneously in the pure abodes and will attain final Nibbana there without returning from that world. That is what the Blessed One said. The monks were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Interesting sutta. Okay? Let's share some merit then. May suffering ones be suffering free and the fear-struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief and may all beings find relief. May all beings share this merit that we've thus acquired for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share this merit of ours. May they long protect the Buddha's dispensation. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.